pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast, and here are your hosts.
You're listening to the Australian Cricket Podcast. Menna's here, and this week a little break from the norm while the Australians toil away in the Sri Lankan heat and try and retain the Warren Murali Trophy, I thought it would be appropriate to re-release one of my favourite shows, which I did 2 years ago with Joe, one of the very first panellists. We did a show 2 years ago to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of this podcast. We did a special on Shane Warne. It was a phenomenal effort by Joe. He put a lot of material together, and this week while the Australians are playing the test match, I thought I would re-release this show. We'll be back next week with our regular studio show. So if you want to get in touch with us between now and then, please do. You can email us at auscricketpod, auscricketpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at auscricketpod, auscricketpod. Yep, we'll be back next week in studio to review the first test versus Sri Lanka and also continue our commentator critique segment. But until then, enjoy this special on the great Shane Warne.
Got him! There it is! Wicket number 700! And they can't catch him! Shane Warne through the gate as Scott Strauss.
Well, that was the legendary Shane Keith Warne taking his 700th wicket. And men, as we were just talking there about whether there's a spinner worthy of going to the World Cup, that certainly wasn't a problem for the previous two decades, was it? Because at one day level and test level, we had in the golden generation of Australian cricket, almost certainly in my opinion, the greatest spinner to ever play cricket. And is that too big a call? Let's start with a big call and work from there. Is he the best ever?
He's certainly the greatest spinner I've ever had the privilege of witnessing. He emerged at Test cricket at a time when these tall, gangly, fast bowlers from the West Indies were dominating world cricket with bouncers and Yorkers, and then this absolute blonde legend
and
emerged.
And it had been a bit of a lost art, hasn't it? It was a thing of Australian legend and myth, leg spin bowling, and we as, you know, youngsters watching cricket at that time had never really seen a quality leg spinner operate.
Yeah, before Warney, we'd had players like Trevor Holmes, Peter Sleep, Kerry O'Keefe. Yes. None of these leg spinners were big turners of the ball.
No.
Maybe the greatest leg spinner in Australian cricket before Shane Warne was Richie Beno. And there was such a big gap there, and all of Test cricket was slowing down because it was being dominated by these fast bowlers off long run-ups, slowing the scoring down, and it was costing Test cricket bums on seats.
You talk there about that prodigious leg break, and I'm going to talk in a little moment about what I think makes Shane Warne such an absolute once-in-a-generation special bowler. And for me, it is that massive, massive leg break that he could produce. In your encyclopedic knowledge of cricket, manners, has anyone ever turned the ball that much? I mean, we have this anomaly that there was a bowler who often was at the other end who had a huge leg break in Stewie McGill. But, you know, in what you've seen in clips, have you ever seen anyone turn the ball as much as Shane Warne?
The difference is, though, when you go back in history, they were playing on wet wickets.
They were.
The ball used the grip, and you or I could get the ball to turn.
They weren't always wet wickets, but
I think it helped players.
They were damper.
Look, it helped Clary Grimmer, but no. And it's before Warney in world cricket. The only player to really turn it before was Abdul Qadir. He had a ripping leg break and a good wrong end. So I guess he was the forerunner. But up until then, we hadn't witnessed that amazing art.
Yeah. The idea behind leg spin bowling up until Shane Warne came along is that you only needed to turn the ball enough to take the edge. We had never seen a guy pitch a ball close to the actual edge of the wicket and bring it back to bowl players. It was something...
And combine that with a wicked drift.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we get on to Shane Warne, the bowler, and let's go through some of these critical stats. We know he played 145 tests. We've just heard his 700th, which was taken Andrew Strauss's wicket. He ended up with 708 wickets in total, with a best bowling of 8 for 71, an average of 21.41 in tests. And you know, one of the forgotten things about Warney is that not only was he a great test bowler, he was a great one-day bowler, and we're going to talk about some of his best one-day performances. performances. He averaged 25.73 in one-day cricket. Menas, what apart from the 700 wickets...
And 293 one-day wickets.
Yeah.
And you know, when he went home early from the World Cup, it probably cost him his 300th one-day wicket. You know, I was lucky enough to be at Shane Warne's first and last Test match. Do you remember doing that, Joe?
I certainly wasn't at the first one, and we'll get into that in just a minute, Menas. Before we get into that first Test match, which was, of course, played against the Indians at the SCG, we had Tim go through, you know, the history of Clary Grimmett, one of our other great spinners last week, and it made me think, what makes Shane Warne different to every other cricketer that's ever played our game? And that's that... We've had some great cricketers. I mean, we've had Beefy Bothams of the world who were big personalities and, you know, even Ian Chappell, an interesting character in a way. But we have never had a superstar celebrity cricketer. And, you know, having recently refreshed my reading of Gideon Haig's book On Warne, which is a great read from one of the truly preeminent cricket writers in the world, it just reminded me that in Warney we had this perfect Australian anti-hero. You know, he was not the sort of prodigious talent who thought he was going to be a test player from age five. He almost got into cricket by accident. He was that sort of fat, very unathletic looking guy in his early career, even towards, you know, even when he was well and truly a man, he had, you know, problems with authority. We saw that with his attitude to somebody like Buchanan, and he was a bit of, he was, you know, to this day he's had that childlike quality of, you know, even the sort of choice of food that he eats that we can all relate to. And if you compare that to a Tendulkar or a Bradman who maintained their sort of that holier than thou image.
Well, I think they've maintained a little bit more distance as well.
Distance,
Shane Warne's been very open.
They were detached from their loving public, those two.
Yeah, Warney seems to... One thing I've always felt about Warney is that we've really seen him grow up before us.
I think
you can say, and I don't want to skip ahead, but
yeah,
some of his leadership qualities towards the end of his playing career displayed how much maybe he had grown up.
Yeah, it's
whereas,
funny.
Say a player like Steve Waugh.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't say that about Steve Waugh. He was the Iceman from the beginning to the end.
He was a man at 18, Steve Waugh.
Yeah,
that was really what made him the cricketer he was. It's funny you mention that about Shane Warne. I follow his Instagram feed, which is a very, very interesting one, and I encourage everyone to get on it. And just as recently as a day ago, he posted a picture of a whole tray full of shot glasses with the little thing saying, "I, you know, just knocked this over and flew without any sleep on a massive hangover. What a huge mistake." And it just reminded me that the one thing you love about Shane Warne is he's one of us.
Mm.
He was a celebrity. He was a great cricketer, but he's one of us. He's a guy that
he's
we can
Aussie
relate
bloke.
To.
He's an Aussie larrikin, you know. He is.
He's exactly that, Menas. Now, getting off Shane Warne, the personality, and onto Shane Warne, the cricketer, you've referred there to a game that you were at, and it was a very inauspicious start to his Test career. We know that he got pasted all around the SCG by a high-quality Indian batting lineup that included a young Sachin Tendulkar.
And you know Ravi Shastri.
Ravi Shastri was a master player of spin.
And he's got a big double 100 against Warney.
He just made him look so ordinary on that day, where Warney posted the figures of 1 for 150. And you would have thought that, and at that point in his career, you would have thought, unlikely looking bloke, couldn't land it more than three balls in a row, was going to be a bit of a flash in the pan. How wrong we were. And what changed Warney from that, you know, that overweight, inconsistent leg spinner to a really good leg spinner? We know he had a guy come into his life, Terry Jenner, who became his lifelong career mentor.
Yep.
And Terry Jenner was of similar ilk, you know, a drinker and a smoker, and basically said to him, "Don't repeat my mistakes."
Yep.
And it was a great message that really hit home to Warney early in his career.
And I think to that also, he had a few hard heads around him. You know, Alan Border, Jeff Marsh and
David Byrne,
who were the hard heads of Australian cricket. You know, it was interesting you talk about that first game. I'll never forget
Ravi Shastri just dancing down the wicket and hitting Warne all over the place and into the stands. And, you know, a couple of years later, players wouldn't dance down the wicket so fearlessly.
We'll talk about this towards the end of the show, but the players that had the most success against him were the players that were willing to use their feet, as any good player of spin does. Somebody who was willing to get out of their crease and meet the ball at its bounce before that prodigious turn could take impact. Yeah.
I think, you know, he probably also got a taste for Test cricket.
That
game in Sydney, you know, I'll never forget when he came out the next season. He looked a totally different player.
Yeah.
He'd slimmed down. He was an athlete.
As I say, the words of Terry Jenner had got through to Warnie, and he'd been out working on his fitness. The next time we saw him was in an away series in 1992 in a series against Sri Lanka. And, you know, in that first Test, Menas, which was in Colombo, again, you know, they were not great stats that he posted in the first innings, and they looked very comfortable against him, and you really thought, hang on, is this guy on the sort of edge of oblivion in his cricket career? And then in the second innings, we'd sort of gone through their middle order and we had three wickets to take, and probably, as you say, a great guy to have in that era of his career was his captain AB, who had seen something in this young guy, threw him the ball, and Warnie did what he did so many times over his illustrious career. He cleaned up the tail and he won a game for us. And as a spinner, that is absolutely what you are paid to do.
And that's a game we really never should have won.
We're
on the back foot from day one. The little Sri Lankan batsman had pasted us.
Yeah.
And then Greg Matthews and Shane Warne bowled us to victory on that last afternoon. Unbelievable stuff. And just a memory from that game is Alan Border took an absolute rip snorter of a catch. I think it was at mid-on going back. Oh, just Alan Border flying through the air. Great memories.
It's a delighted Shane Warne and Australian teammates as the West Indies are on the ropes. And that could be the end of the Test match. 7 wickets for Shane Warne. Big Merv's got great hands. He won't miss it. And there it is, a great victory for Australia and a tremendous day's work for Shane Warne. His best bowling ever in first-class cricket.
Hi and welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Menas, and joining me is Joe for this special one-year anniversary edition. We're looking at Shane Warne, the life and times of Shane Warne. To me, that sound we just heard was a pivotal moment in Shane Warne's career. He bowled out the West Indies on the last day of a Boxing Day test to win the game. He took 7 for 52. It was his best bowling figures in first-class cricket up until that point. And I'll never forget, he bowled a flipper to Richie Richardson that completely foxed him. You know, he missed it by miles. And that was sort of the first evidence how deadly his flipper was going to be in the next 2 years. Because the next few years, there was a golden times for his flipper.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he lost it towards the end. But he did. Really.
And an interesting point that Gideon Haig makes is that as an Australian leg spinner, your flipper is almost your inheritance. Because that's an Australian delivery, Manners. That was sort of, you know, like we're now seeing the Dusra is effectively a ball that has been developed in the subcontinent. The flipper is a ball that was developed by Australian leg spinners and has been passed on through the generations, and didn't Warnie perfect it in his early career?
Watching him beat a batsman with the flipper in those early days.
Richie Richardson rocks onto the back foot thinking he's going to pull that ball, and before he knows it, it's taken his stumps.
Anyway, great times, great, and a great victory for Australia there. You know, Australia went on to lose that series against the West Indies in heartbreaking fashion, and I always thought that was one of the series that would have hardened Shane Warne's attitude. You know, he did come in at a time when Australian cricket was on the up, but we hadn't ascended to the top of world cricket yet.
Yeah, but what we did know is that after that 7-for, we had something pretty special on our hands. But we didn't know how special that was, Menas, of course, until he toured England for the first time in 1993.
Is it fair to say you're not worth your salt as an Australian cricketer until you've performed at Ashes level?
Well, I think that's true. And I think what we will look at over the course of Shane Warne's career is I think he probably produced his best bowling against the Poms and the South Africans. And as an Australian...
And the Kiwis, and all our arch enemies.
All our arch, that's what I mean. You get my drift, Manners. He produced it when it mattered in the big games. And there's nothing bigger than an Ashes series, an away Ashes series. In Manchester 93, Manners, let's take out the audience back there for a minute. We've all seen that ball 100 times. It is a combination between three very, very deadly things.
Joe, can I just interrupt you and set the scene here?
Please do, Manners.
You know, one, talking about Alan Border being an old fox, you know, he famously held back Shane Warne in the county games leading up to the first test. He knew the English batsmen had heard a lot about Shane Warne, but they hadn't faced him yet. So I remember Graham Hick pasted Shane Warne in a county game, and Border said, just go easy, just roll them out.
He didn't buy any of his variety.
Don't show him anything. So coming into the first Ashes test, the scene is set.
Yeah.
Nobody knows much about this blonde leg spinner.
Well, what do we see? So often a leggy will bowl a half tracker just to loosen up in their first ball. First ball of the series, he would have been nervous if Warney does indeed get nervous. And what
all the people back home just settling down in Australia with a cup of tea and a biscuit, turning on the Ashes.
He produces,
as you do,
a ball that drifts about a foot outside Mike Gatting's leg stump. It then pitches perfectly out of reach for Gatting, who sort of, you know, goes halfway forward to it. It then beats the outside of his bat and takes the top of his off stump. It is just, I don't know how many balls he bowled in Test cricket after that, but he was never going to produce anything as good as that. It's as good a leg spin ball as you can. And it introduced us to something that we had probably not seen to that point. I mean, we'd seen offies who can drift it a little bit, but we saw huge drift, huge leg break combined with a very accurate delivery. And that was what that really sums up Shane Warne, the combination of those three things.
And what a miraculous delivery, and to display how miraculous it was. No one knew what happened. No. Gatting didn't know what happened. And if you listen to the English commentary, they don't even know what's happened. Is he out?
It's Jonathan Agnew commentating, and they need to go to a second replay to actually work out what happened.
Richie knew what was going on. He always knows what's going on. And you could say this is first evidence of Warne the showman. You know, they talk about writing his own scripts. Well, here's one of them. First ball in Ashes cricket. He had prime time TV back home.
Warne had such a sense of theatre. And to produce that ball on the first ball of your first Ashes series, well, it was just a superstar.
And then he followed it up with Robin Smith's wicket, I think, in the next over. Tubby Taylor took a great catch at slip. And from there, Australia dominated that Ashes series.
He was lucky to have some great slippers in there. You know, Matty Hayden could take a pretty good catch off him later in his career.
You had opening the bowling for Australia in that series, Shane Warne and Merv Hughes. Sorry, it's your two leading wicket takers. That's a fair bit of beer being drunk as well off the field, isn't it? Fair with few wickets on the field and a fair bit of beer off it. So times have changed.
So Shane Warne ended up taking 4 for 51 in that game and went on to take an absolute bucket of wickets in that series. And just started, or continued from 1989, what we would call a strong era of dominance over the arch enemy. So I'm just going to talk for a moment. I'm going to expand a little bit about what made Warne such.
Let's get into Warne in real detail now.
Devastating leg spin bowler, and I've talked about it a little bit there.
This bit's for you, Clive. I know you're loving this.
Let's get into some of the technical stuff.
This guy said he's a Murali fan, a listener. He told me.
So, man, is just getting technical for a minute. He could do two things with the ball that are just so critical for a leg spinner. He bowled with great loop. So what that meant is it got above the batsman's eye line. So instead of being able to keep your eyes steady and watch the ball out of the hand onto the bat, you had to lift the head and then find the landing position again. Quite tough. Secondly, so he's taken you. Taken your eyes up. The next thing he's done as a batsman is he's drifted it outside your leg stump. So your eyes have gone up, then your eyes have gone out to your, as a right-hand batsman, to your off stump to try and find the ball. By which stage you probably haven't got your leg adequately outside the line. If you have, the next thing that's coming is a ripping leg break to either take a little nice little tickle of your edge or your off stump. It's just a devastating combination.
You know, it's really hard when you're bowling leg spin to get that combination of drift and loop and spin.
Yeah.
You know, if you put a lot of revolutions on the ball, your natural instinct is to drag it down a bit. Yeah, whereas if you just throw it up there, they tend not to turn as much. Rooney was able to combine both of them.
Exactly right. And we saw...
I talked about
Stuart McGill, who was also had a huge leg break.
The killer.
But you know, what he couldn't do was produce it... He would often throw in a long hop, which Warney, when he was in his best periods, didn't do. And to be able to produce so much spin and work on the ball and not bowl much rubbish at all is just incredible.
And the drift used to take it into a batsman's blind spot, so you almost lose it for a moment there.
So you've lost it to two blind spots by the time you've even thought about playing a shot to him. But Menas, one thing that did happen over the course of Warney's career is that his leg break didn't turn as much when he got older. He lost his flipper. He didn't have the, you know, that incredible variety nor the huge turner. But what did he develop? You know, he certainly developed a mental dominance over most batsmen in the world. And well, I know you want to say something about that.
Well, you know, what I think was amazing about Warney is his ability to subtle variations of spin. You know, the difference between a top spinner and a leg spinner is only a slight angle of the wrist. He became the master at working not only his wrist angle, so getting, you know, more top spin or more leg spin, but also put that into action with a plan against the batsman of working a line or a corridor of the batsman's weakness. He was an absolute genius at that sort of subtle variety.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, he added a really strong slider that was almost like a quick top spinner. It sort of came out the front of his hand,
which had the same impact as a, you know, different delivery, but a similar impact to the flipper that he lost, because what it could do is bring back the LBW into play, which is very important to be able to produce a straight delivery when your stock ball turns quite a lot. I want to talk a little bit about the mind games for a moment, Menas. And a very funny anecdote was that I talked about being able to work over umpires. Apparently, he used to always point out to the umpire when he'd bowled the straight one. And he had that great repartee with people like Rudy Kutson, the umpire. And he apparently told Rudy quite a few times that he couldn't pick his deliveries either, like most of the batsmen in the world cricket at the time. But there was... Warney always looked like he was in control in the middle. He controlled how long he took between deliveries. You know, he was the master at the oohs and the ahs and the... He, for a long part of his career, he had Healy behind the stumps chirping away. We know all these bold Warney.
I saw that great...
Good areas.
You know, I was looking for some stuff for this episode, and I saw when Warney was bowling to Butt at Ali, and it was the last ball of the day, and they stopped and he walked down, and him and Healy had a bit of a conference, and they moved a couple of fielders, and it was great bravado from Shane Warne. G'd the crowd up, and then ended up bowling Buzzard Ali behind his legs with an absolute gem.
He was the master at mental disintegration, which became a term used for the Australian cricket team at large. But it all centred around Warney. Warney could read the momentum. He knew the key moments. And in sport in general, Menas, the best players step up in the big moments. And if it was the last ball before lunch or the last ball of the day, he would get the brains trust in. He would bear so much pressure down on a batsman that often they'd get themselves out. He didn't need to do it. He'd already won the battle of the head before the ball had come out of his hand. And that is such an input. To understand Shane Warne, you've got to understand his ability to control the mind of the batsman. And if it wasn't through things like field placements and controlling the tempo of the game, he was a great master sledger. And there are some really good examples that, again, Gideon Hay refers to. He used to call, you know, Chris Cairns, who was famously injured in his career, you know, he'd come out and Warney had put on a little limp. Nasser Hussain would come out to bat, he'd call him Saddam. McMillan from South Africa, who was a bit of an older rotund guy, used to call Depardieu after the famous French actor. So
he does look like him. Have a look. Brian McMillan and Gerard Depardieu.
Google it tomorrow. It is an uncanny likeness. But, he often simply just used to ask young batsmen who were coming to the crease for the first time, what are you doing out here? Because it was his patch and it was his territory, the middle. Shane Warne owned it and he had some famous bunnies over the years. You know, the names that come to mind are people like Cullinan. Before we get into that list, Menes is going to play us a clip.
I'll just set the stage for you. This is Shane Warne bowling to Darryl Cullinan in 1993-94 at the SCG, and it really shows you some of Warne's most canny qualities. Have a listen to this, and have a listen to Richie Beno's great commentary.
Warne coming on at the Randwick end, and he didn't wait long, and Cullinan is straight onto it.
Well, that looked to me to be the one Warne shows them. Could almost pick that from up here. There it is, just pulled straight down. And Cullinan was onto it.
Flipper, and he's got him again with it. So he's pulled one for four, but missed the second one.
And I think you can guarantee that Shane Warne has outthought him there. Show him the obvious flipper, let him pull it for four, and then slip the other one in, and it was through him, it was candy from kids.
Oh, welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I remember that like it was yesterday. Now, I've got a list here of Shane Warne's bunnies. Who stands out for you here, Joey?
Let's go through the top few. Alex Stewart, test average of 29. He was a few people's bunnies. Huntsy, Cronier, he actually had the better of Warne from time to time.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But Warne got him 15 times. McMillan, not the South African one, but the one from New Zealand, got him 14 times. Nasser Hussain looked like he had no idea against Warne from time to time, 13. And the next one is one of the giants of the era, Jacques Culleyssy, got 12 times. And then,
but that's in 43 tests. That's he got Nasser Hussain out 13 times in 27 tests.
Yeah, Nasser Hussain had no idea against him. Darryl Cullinan, who we've just heard the clip of, his most famous bunny of all. And then, interestingly, the next one on the list, Inzamam Ul Haq, is the only subcontinent batsman in that top list of Warne's most dismissed batsmen. And I think that's a pretty key and telling stat. The guys from the subcontinent who grow up playing spin dealt with him a lot better. I think Sachin Tendulkar played him better than anyone else.
Yeah, Muhammad Azharuddin in those early years.
That's true.
Took him to pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting with Warne that when he used to get on top of a batsman, he really used to stay on top for a long time. It was hard for a batsman to escape his grasp once he was able to weave his magic almost. You remember those days when Cullinan came to the wicket and he was just all at sea. This player, this much vaunted talent, was completely rocked.
He had to go and see a sports psychologist to deal with his fear of Shane Warne. Just before we move on to some of the actual lowlights in Shane Warne's career, a really interesting quote here from Michael Atherton in a piece that he wrote as a little tribute to Warne. He describes him as the perfect amalgam of Australian leg spin bowling. Arthur Mayley's carefree big leg spinners, Grimmett's miserliness, O'Reilly's competitiveness, and Richie Beno's cunning, all combined in a showman from the television age. That's a beautiful quote and really sums it up and plays to the history of Australian leg spin bowling at the same time.
Definitely, Joe. Now let's get into these lowlights.
Manners, 2001, not just a lowlight for Shane Warne personally, and he did get pasted by the new generation of Indian batsmen. I'm thinking of Dravid and Lutchman, who in that famous massive partnership after Steve Waugh had got them to follow on in 2001 just took Shane Warne to every corner of that ground, didn't they? Yeah. Any memories from that game?
Well, not only from the 2001 tour to India, but the 1996 tour where he went with Mark Taylor and that Tendulkar and Azharuddin got stuck into him there. On those two tours, Shane Warne did not look the bowler that we had seen on Australian wickets.
Yeah, and it's funny.
The slow turn. And the low bounce really used to negate a lot of his leg spinning.
Really good point, man, is when we think about the pitches that Warne was most successful on, I think about pitches like the Wacker, which are thought of as a fast bowler's pitch, because how important was quick bounce to Warnie's leg spinner and his top spinner. You know, often he would get the batsman playing forward and it would take the shoulder of the bat purely through bounce. But on those slow turners, as you say, he wasn't nearly as effective, was he?
No, and you combine that with very confident players against spin.
They grow up playing spin.
Very tough for him on the subcontinent. You know, you've got here his 2005 Ashes,
where he took an absolute bucket of wickets,
as being a low light. Well, now, obviously, you know, he took a load of wickets. He scored over 300 runs.
Man, it's a low light from the point of view as I remember the day, the evening when I was sitting on my couch watching that 2005 Ashes series, and the you know, what could have been the decider at the Oval, the last test. You know, hadn't he just done such great work bowling, and he bowled us back into that game effectively.
Mm.
And you thought, here we go. You know, this is going to be Warnie at his pomp. He's going to, you know, it looked like we were going to lose that series. He was going to save our bacon again. And just at the point where the momentum was...
The pendulum.
It was the game was on the line, and Brett Lee bowls a beautiful outswinger to KP.
This is the last morning of the Oval Test.
The Oval Test.
It was almost a forerunner to what happened in Adelaide a couple of years later. Same situation. Australia needed to bowl England out and then chase a small total.
Yeah, and Warnie was bowling beautifully. He actually, off his own bowling, KP had already been dropped.
That's right.
I think
behind the stumps.
Yeah, behind the stumps. It went through the keeper and first slip. And then a couple of overs later, Warnie is, you know, looking pretty confident, happy with himself, as he tended to do. And Lee takes KP's edge, and Warnie drops the easiest chest level slips catch you ever see. And I just
They're never easy in slips, Joe.
I just remember sitting there and thinking to myself, the test is lost, the series is lost, Warnie of all people to have done it, and the era. It was like the innocence of my childhood was gone, man.
I know, it was.
Do you remember the feeling?
I remember the feeling, and it was definitely a low light. The only thing about Warnie there is he played so well in that series, and I guess the whole team probably let him down throughout the series. It should never have come to that point.
But, man, as was the way with Shane Warne's fairy tale career.
You know, but sorry, I just want to interrupt. Yeah. You've conveniently left off the low lights. All the personal stuff. I mean,
we're going to get into some of those misdemeanors.
I mean, there's obviously pages and pages of misdemeanors.
His rap sheet. We could have done a 2-hour show on Warnie's rap sheet.
And I'm obviously not interested in that stuff. No, I'm all about Warnie as a leggy. But on the field, he didn't have many lowlights. Let's be honest.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
He had that one dip when he came back from injury, and Stuart McGill almost did take his spot.
He got dropped in the two of the Windies.
That was 1999.
Yes, he got dropped. And,
you know, that was probably
caused a lot of tension between him and Steve Waugh that was never resolved, I don't think. But as is Warnie's, as I was saying, fairy tale career, we've just talked about two lights being 2001 in India and 2005 in England. In each case, he came back both him personally and as a team to right those wrongs. In India, it was in 2004 when, you know, Ponting was injured, and under Adam Gilchrist's career, we did what we could never do under Steve Waugh. And, you know, Warnie, he didn't have his best series, but he was part of a team that won in what we call the final frontier. He bowled pretty well in that series. Any memories, Manners?
No, that was a real team effort. I think it's interesting, actually, that you've put this as a highlight for me, because I think he was a cog in the wheel, but I think there's other series where Warnie has been the dominant force, especially early on. He really used to dominate every series against England and every series against South Africa. He was the main man.
Take issue with that for one moment. The first test of that 2004 series, he took a fourfer in Bangalore, and he took Lachman twice. And Lachman had at that series was our tormentor.
Yeah.
Took him twice in that first test. You know, he started to drift the ball a bit, get a lot of work back on the ball, which he hadn't been able to do in India in the past. So, you know, definitely a team highlight. Then 2006, 2007, he decided to play on after 2005, and at 36, he could have easily thrown in the towel and just said it's all too hard, but he came back. And of course, in Adelaide, you know, KP, who had scored 158 in that final test in 2005 at the Oval, produced another 158 in that Adelaide game, and it looked like England, for all money, were going to win that, or towards the latter part of the game that it could have been a draw. And Gilly, his memory of that game is that Warney always believed that Australia could win from any position. And
he was the one saying it. Going into that last day, every time you give him a microphone, he was like, oh, we can win this.
Yeah. And that sums up Warney. He always was bowling for wickets and playing to win. We went on, of course, to win that famous test in Adelaide and go on to win that series 5-0. And it capped off just... The blip was 2005, but over the span of his career, Australia dominated England and Shane Warne dominated England. And look at the stats here, man, as he took 11 five-wicket bags over his career and an average of 23.26 against the old enemy.
A champagne performance.
Yeah. And he, of course, again... fairy tale end, got to go out at the SCG with his old bowling partner, Glenn McGrath. And he was, he was getting on 37 by that stage, but you think he could have played on a bit longer?
Well, I'm asking you, Joe, I want to ask you, do you think he retired from Test cricket too early?
Well, we saw his form in the IPL following that period. He still was producing very good bowling. But as a 37, 38-year-old, you know, trying to play your trade as a leg spin bowler, I think he probably timed it perfectly, man. As we won the Ashes back, McGrath was going out at the same time. I think, you know, Warney has such a good sense of timing, and he got the timing perfectly right on that occasion.
You wonder if he could have kept up bowling those big days, 20, 30 overs. The other thing is, we were so lucky that we could get every year or two a headline, will Shane Warne come back?
You know,
if he'd retired at 41, 42, we wouldn't have had that 5 years where you could, if you were desperate for a cricket story, you could float a Shane Warne comeback.
How many times did we see that story, man? Is every time we had a bad
Every time he had a good run in a 2020 game, or he'd turn up at an Aussie training and bowl a ball, they'd say he was on a comeback. Now, guys, we are going to have Joe's favourite Shane Warne memory in a sec. I want to set the scene for Joe's favourite memory. It's the 1999 World Cup semi-final.
The listeners should be very familiar with that
game. We talked about this game a lot. We all know I was there, Edgbaston. And Shane Warne came on to bowl, and the game was really almost gone. South Africa were none for 40-odd, just chasing a tick over 200. All the Aussie spirits were down. You know, we could see this could be another fruitless World Cup campaign like the 96 World Cup, and Australia was going to go home with nothing.
Well, cometh the moment, cometh the man, Menas. And he'd done it in 1996 in the World Cup against the Windies, completely turned the momentum of the game. And after it looked like South Africa were going to cruise to victory, of course, we see a run of incredible dismissals.
Have a listen to this. This is Shane Warne in action, Edgbaston, 1999, Joe's favourite Shane Warne memory.
Oh, beautiful goal. That's a wonderful delivery from Shane Warne. Clipping the top of off stump. That's absolutely exactly what the Australians needed. Well, two quick wickets for Australia, both to this man, Shane Warne. Straight to slip. He's got in. Great little catch. Beautifully bowled by Shane Warne. This game is coming alive.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast.
The goosebumps, men, as I can see on your arm listening to that.
Oh, you were there. Back, yeah.
The highlight of your life.
Yes.
So
why is that your favourite memory, okay, Joe?
So I've talked about Shane Warne. I liken him to somebody like Michael Jordan, who when the game was on the line wanted the ball in his hands. Warney was exactly the same from a cricketing sense. So
big match player.
Yeah, it looked like we were gone for all money in that game. And of course, he took Gibbs with a fantastic delivery. And then a couple of balls later, he took Gary Kirsten's wicket. And what we can't hear in that particular grab there is after he took Kirsten's wicket, he turned to his teammates and you can actually scream. He goes, come on.
And interestingly, coming into this game and this tournament, you know, this is right after we talked about in 1999, he'd just been dropped from the test side. His form in this World Cup tournament hadn't been anything special.
Yeah.
And he was just starting to display some of that old great Shane Warne. But it wasn't till this moment that it really came out of the bag.
One thing is, if
Shane Warne was back, if
he ever had any doubts about his ability, you never saw them. It always looked like he backed himself. And what he did is he had the ability to drag his teammates on his shoulders over the line in big moments. And this was probably the biggest moment of them all. And it's incredible that in a great Test career, 1996 World Cup and this World Cup, in key semi-finals, he produced two of his finest spells, Manners.
Do you think it's a bit of a surprise that he only lifted the World Cup once?
That does surprise me. It's an interesting... I hadn't ever really thought about it before.
You know, for such a great player who was part of that golden generation, you know... Because
Ricky Ponting, of course, lifted it three times in his career.
You know, you've got here his misdemeanors. Let's go through two of them.
Yeah. The two key ones that come to mind for me, Menners, is the diuretics, of course. He was
sent home from the 2003 World Cup.
Huge, huge story at the time. And you're going to pose the question as, was that actually a more serious, sinister breach of anti-doping laws than what it looked like on the face of it? He spun a pretty good story, didn't he, that his mummy was getting conscious about his weight, bought diuretics for him?
Yeah.
You didn't buy it?
It's not that I... It's not that I don't buy it, but it's convenient that at the time Shane Warne was recovering from a shoulder injury. He looked like for all money...
Cortisone injection,
he looked
for sure.
Like for all money he was going to miss the 2003 World Cup.
Yeah.
But he was desperate to play because he denounced he was going to retire at the end of that tournament. So he was desperate...
Is this a late-breaking story on the Australian Cricket Podcast that he had a cortisone injection?
No, it's not cortisone. But diuretics are used to mask performance-enhancing drugs.
Yes.
So the insinuation is he took something to heal his shoulder. Obviously, we'll never know.
No.
But, it curtailed his one-day career. It stopped him lifting the World Cup for a second time.
Mm.
He never got a send-off in one-day cricket for Australia. Finished on 293 wickets.
Yeah.
A very ignominious way for one of the true legends of Australian one-day cricket to finish up.
Yeah, and of course...
Very much a lowlight.
Of course, the other big one, Manners, and as Australians, we like to think about gambling and match fixing as a subcontinental problem in Australian cricket. You know, we love to point the finger, but of course, one of the absolute proven cases of players taking money from a bookie, they've admitted it, is Shane Warne and Mark Waugh with John the Bookie. And I don't think this was ever explained properly. And I think, you know, Cricket Australia actually did a pretty good job of sweeping this one under the carpet. But, you know, it is a blight on someone's integrity. And for me, this is the only real dark question mark in the career of Shane Warne is what...
Yeah, look, I put it up. I put the diuretic stuff up equally with this one. I think you can blame naivety on this misdemeanor.
Mm.
I don't think anybody, especially not these young blokes from Australia, Shane Warne and Mark Waugh, it was very early on in his career, really knew what a shady, murky side of cricket was developing on the subcontinent. And I do think it was just a case of you put some cash in front of a couple of guys and it's hard to say no.
Well, we've talked a lot in today's Warney special about his ability to read games. You would have to question, he's got such a good cricket brain on him, Warney, that would he have made one of our great Australian test captains? And of course, he made some of our best captains of the previous era better captains for having a great leg spinner in their lineup. He played under AB, Tubby, Tugger and Punter. And all of them could attack more than you would be able to in normal circumstances because they always knew that if they could get into a winning position in the fourth innings, invariably he'd bowl them to victory. And one of his absolute out-and-out supporters over the years has been Ian Chappelli-Chappell, who has often argued that he should have been made captain instead of Steve Waugh. Now, we all know that Steve Waugh was one of our best ever, and I don't think you can argue with him being given the captaincy. Two issues here. Purely on cricket terms, Warney probably would have been a more creative captain, a more attacking captain, but too many misdemeanors off the field. There is the chance that with a character like Warney, a lot of it is about Warney. I mean, you look at him even today, it's all about Warney. Could he have kept a dressing room together?
He displayed when he took over the side. Steve Waugh was injured and he took over the side for one-day try series in Australia, and he was able to galvanise the side. You know, you can say what you like about Warney, but he is well-liked. He was always well-liked by his teammates in cricketing sense, and he used to bring the side together. I think he could have done it.
Well, the two people we know that he had issues with at various times over his career were actually Steve Waugh. There is known tension between those two, and Ricky Ponting.
But always a lot of mutual respect between Waugh and Warne. That was clear.
What about Ponting? We know that in that famous second test in that 2005 series, where Ponting, you know, knew that McGrath had rolled his ankle and still decided to bowl first. We know that Shane Warne thinks that was just one of the dumbest things that's done in Australian cricket captaincy. My thinking, Warney always believed that he was could have been a smarter and better captain than Punter, and hard to argue.
I think if you look back in the history, you know, as I said, it's hard to argue with Steve Waugh, but I think you can say Shane Warne might have been a better captain than Ricky Ponting. And, you know, you look at what he was able to do with Rajasthan Royals when he took that young side to the IPL title. I know it's only 2020 cricket, but what you saw is a maturity in him that obviously wasn't present earlier on, but started to develop in his ability to lead other men, which maybe he you know, some people get that early and he didn't.
Yeah.
Remember when he was Steve Waugh's vice captain, and I think he digressed off the field one too many times and he was stripped of the vice captaincy. Yeah. That seemed to be the end of his leadership ambitions then, or of the people who run Cricket Australia
There's no doubt cricket is a big business now, and Cricket Australia couldn't afford to have the risk of a character like Warney as its figurehead, and I think that's what cost him the captaincy. We had a pretty good run of captains though, didn't we? You know, we hard to complain.
But with the what's come out now that Shane Warne is so, you know, he mic'd himself up in the 2020 tournaments. He's commentating a lot.
He's a great thinker.
He displays that on all the time. He's a cricketing genius. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He reads the game as good as anybody ever has.
There is no doubt about that. And for that very reason, the one question mark that hangs over is, did we miss our opportunity to have one of our greatest ever captains? We'll never know. What we do know, Menas, is that he was one of our greatest ever players. And in 2000, he was recognised with only four other cricketers as one of Wisden's cricketers of the century. And a huge accolade there, Menas. And I'm going to put it to you that when, you know, in 200 or 300 years...
I'm just trying to think of the other four. Bugging me now. I've got Bradman, Richards, Sobers... Tendulkar, Warne.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
it's a great five.
It's a great five, Menas. In 200 or 300 years, history tends
love
to be
a bit of cricket porn. Love a bit of cricket porn.
A pretty blunt instrument. When we think about Bradman's era now, when there were so many greats in Australian cricket, but apart from absolute cricket nuts like you, not many people can remember too many other names other than Bradman.
Yeah,
from
Tim
that
certainly
era.
Doesn't.
And I think despite the fact that he wasn't captain and we had so many greats around him like McGrath and Steve Waugh and Adam Gilchrist,
Matt
Hayden. When we think about that two decades of Australian cricket dominance, you know, in three generations' time, it will be thought of as the time of only one man in Australian cricket. I truly believe this. It'll be remembered as Shane Warne's era.
Well, it's hard to argue with that. He does stand head and shoulders above the rest.
He was, and he wasn't the captain, Menas, but what he was the spiritual leader of the side. And that brings me to one of my favourite stories about Shane Warne, quite a light-hearted one that Matty Hayden tells in one of his books, when the team were, you know, John Buchanan was trying to bring new methods to the team and trying to galvanise them, and he took them away on some harebrained...
And Warne and Buchanan weren't great mates, were they?
Warne was sort of loved the old school Australian cricketer.
Him and Ciappelli, the only Australian coach is the one that takes you to the ground? Isn't that their famous quote?
Exactly, Manners. And Warney was always, you know, brought that sort of old school Australian larrikinism. And even when they'd done things like the Academy and John Buchanan in his era had done, you know, lots of video analysis, Warney liked to keep the game pretty simple by all... accounts. And on that Buchanan's idea was to take them away on a sort of a camp,
army style boot camp.
And in order to get really serious about that, at the very start of the boot camp, they all had to bring and declare all of the personal items that they were bringing on. And this was done in silence in a hangar in the middle of nowhere, sort of very army style. All the other players had taken it incredibly seriously. Warney was the last one to saunter in. And after he'd put, you know, all of his other pieces of accoutrement on the floor, the last thing to come out of Warney's pocket was a packet of B&H, a gold packet of B&H. And the drill sergeant...
So that's a packet of cigarettes for those, most of the listeners out there. Nobody smokes these days.
Okay. The drill sergeant looks at Warney and just can't believe his eyes and says to him, "What's this?" You know, clearly Warney knew that they were banned. And Warney looks at the other members of the Australian cricket team, looks at John Buchanan, looks at the drill sergeant and says, "Mate, if they don't go, the king doesn't go." And the point is, Menas, he was the king of Australian cricket, always will be. Cheers to Warney.
Oh, what a great story there. It really displays Warney's charisma, his bravado. What a great bowler. And that was the special...
And did love a cigarette.
Shane Warne edition. What a great... We've waxed lyrical about one of the great leg spinners of all time. I really hope the listeners enjoyed it. Thanks, Joe. That was some special.
Well, he's one of my heroes of my childhood. It was a pleasure to spend our one-year anniversary with Warney.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. We'll be back next week.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.